Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. Former President Donald Trump refusing to answer questions under oath in an investigation of his company by the New York Attorney General, pleading the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination and calling the investigation an unfounded, politically motivated witch hunt. Inflation easing a bit, but still historically high. Labor Department says the Consumer Price Index for July up 8.5% versus a year earlier, and that is down from the June report of 9.1% from a year ago. The Democrats' $740 billion bill that covers health care, climate programs, and tax changes, the one they're calling the Inflation Reduction Act, which just passed the Senate last weekend, now advancing in the House today before the House Rules Committee, which will be setting the rules for full House debate later this week. Justice Department announcing charges against an Iranian operative for an alleged plot to assassinate John Bolton, former national security advisor to former President Trump, in apparent retaliation for the U.S. killing of a top Iranian general. China says it has finished almost a week of military drills around Taiwan in protest of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to the island, which is self-governing, but which is also claimed by China as its sovereign territory. We'll hear from Speaker Pelosi, who is now back in Washington. And President Joe Biden signing into law a bill expanding health care to millions of veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Former President Donald Trump today sitting for a deposition in an investigation by New York Attorney General Letitia James into his business and finances, specifically whether his company improperly inflated the value of assets on financial statements in order to obtain loans and tax benefits. New York Times writing, New York State Attorney General Letitia James sat across from Donald J. Trump as he repeatedly declined to answer questions invoking his right against self-incrimination during a deposition on Wednesday, according to one of Mr. Trump's lawyers. The lawyer said that over the course of about 4 hours with several breaks, Mr. Trump answered only one question about his name toward the beginning of the interview. Then he read a statement into the record in which he called the inquiry a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of our country and accused Ms. James of having openly campaigned on a policy of destroying me. A larger statement that former President Trump posting online also has this: I once asked, if you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Now I know the answer to that question. When your family, your company, and all the people in your orbit have become the targets of an unfounded, politically motivated witch hunt supported by lawyers, prosecutors, and the fake news media, you have no choice. He goes on, if there was any question in my mind, the raid of my home, Mar-a-Lago, on Monday by the FBI just 2 days prior to this deposition wiped out any uncertainty. I have no choice because the current administration and many prosecutors in this country have lost all moral and ethical bounds of decency. Part of the statement from former President Trump. Two of his children, Ivanka and Donald Jr., were deposed in this investigation earlier this month. Now from the Wall Street Journal, the pace of price increases slowed in July as energy costs dropped, pulling annual U.S. inflation down slightly from a four-decade high. Labor Department on Wednesday said the Consumer Price Index, a measure of what consumers pay for goods and services, rose 8.5% in July from the same month a year ago, down from 9.1% in June. June marked the fastest pace of inflation since November 1981. President Joe Biden commenting on the inflation report at the start of a program at the White House on a different subject. President also urging Congress to pass that Inflation Reduction Act.
Before I begin today, I want to say a word about the news that came out today relative to the economy. Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July. 0%. Here's what that means. While the price of some things went up last month, the price of other things went down by the same amount. The result, zero inflation last month, but people are still hurting, but zero inflation last month. Economists look at a measure of inflation that ignores food and energy prices, and they call it core inflation. That's about the lowest amount in several months. When you couple that with last week's booming jobs report of 528,000 jobs created last month and 3.5% unemployment, it underscores the kind of economy we've been building. We're seeing a stronger labor market. where jobs are booming and Americans are working, and we're seeing some signs that inflation may be beginning to moderate. That's what happens when you build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out. The wealthy do very well, and everyone has a chance. It gives everyone a chance to make progress. Now I want to be clear. With the global challenges we face, from the war in Europe to disruption of supply chains and pandemic shutdowns in Asia, we could face additional headwinds in the months ahead. Our work is far from over, but two things should be clear. First, the economic plan is working, and second is building an economy that will reward work. Wages are up this month, provide opportunity, help the middle class, and still have work to do, but we're on track. The second point I want to make is we need to pass the Inflation Reduction Act right away. That's the most consequential thing the Congress can do to keep our progress from on inflation from getting better, from getting worse, keep it moving in the right direction. And it will bring down the cost of prescription drugs, health insurance premiums, and energy costs. It's going to make big corporations just pay their fair share, nothing more than their fair share. It's going to reduce the deficit without raising a penny in taxes on people making under $400,000 a year. But it's far from done in our effort to bring inflation down, but we're moving in the right direction. So some good economic news today and some work ahead.
President Biden at the White House. Associated Press writing about the inflation report. Much of the relief last month was felt by travelers. Hotel room costs fell 2.7% from June to July. Airfares nearly 8%, and rental car prices a whopping 9.5%. Those price drops followed steep increases in the past year after COVID-19 cases eased and travel rebounded. Airfares are still nearly 30% higher than they were a year ago. Associated Press also noting gas prices dropped from $5 a gallon on average in mid-June to $4.20 by the end of last month, and were just $4.01 on Wednesday, according to AAA. Now to the House Rules Committee meeting to consider that $740 billion bill that the president referenced, calling it the Inflation Reduction Act. It deals with climate change, healthcare costs, tax code changes. It passed the Senate last weekend 51-50 along party lines, Democrats voting yes, Republicans voting no, and Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie. The House Rules Committee will be setting the rules for full House floor debate later this week. We'll hear from the chair and the ranking Republican. First, the chair of the committee, James McGovern, Democrat of Massachusetts.
First, this bill will reduce health care costs and drug prices for seniors and hardworking families across the country. It will extend affordable health coverage to 13 million people, cap seniors' yearly out-of-pocket drug costs at $2,000 per year, and cap insulin at $35 per month for Medicare beneficiaries. I wish we could have done that for everybody, but some of our friends in the Senate decided to frustrate that effort, unfortunately. It takes on Big Pharma for the first time ever, allowing Medicare to begin negotiating prices for a small group of drugs that will expand over time. Second, this bill will take historic action to address one of the biggest threats in our lifetime, the climate crisis. This bill will put us on a path to cutting carbon emissions by 40% by 2030, rapidly accelerating the adoption of renewable energy technologies and creating millions of good jobs. This bill will slash consumers' energy costs, saving the average family $1,025 a year. It provides cheaper, cleaner energy and gives our planet a fighting chance. Third, the Inflation Reduction Act accomplishes these goals without raising taxes on small businesses and middle-class Americans, in line with President Biden's promise not to raise taxes on any family making less than $400,000 per year. Instead, the bill makes our tax code more fair by raising taxes on only the highest earners and closing tax loopholes on the most profitable corporations. And, just so everyone understands, analysts predict this bill could reduce the federal deficit by over $102 billion over the next decade. Others say $2 trillion over 20 years. Either way, we are saving money and lowering our country's national debt. All of these measures will boost our economy and tackle inflation, as economist Larry Summers says, by reducing our budget deficit, lessening demand, increasing supply, and supporting direct bargaining for lower prices. No bill is perfect. There are things I wish were still included in this final package. Closing the carried interest loophole, for example, or funding for housing or universal pre-K and nutrition programs. I wish we thought bolder about making sure that every child in this country had access to a free school meal when they attend school. I wish the extension of the child tax credit was here. I wish again that we capped insulin at $35 per month for everyone, including those with private insurance. But you know what? We can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And this is a big, big deal.
Congressman James McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts, chair of the Rules Committee. The ranking Republican on the committee is Tom Cole from Oklahoma.
Today's hearing covers the grossly misnamed Inflation Reduction Act. Once again, the majority is bringing forward a deeply partisan reconciliation bill. Last year, the majority passed into law a terrible reconciliation bill on partisan lines that spent $1.9 trillion. At the time, economists warned that spending that much money would inevitably lead to inflation. A year later, and those predictions have come home to roost. We're now facing the worst inflationary environment in 40 years as a direct consequence of the majority's actions last year. But today, Democrats are bringing us another breathtakingly bad taxing and spending bill that will only make inflation worse and extend the current recession. The same administration party that assured us that the American Rescue Plan wouldn't spark an unprecedented surge in inflation is now telling us that the latest tax and spend monstrosity won't deepen and lengthen the recession. They were wrong last year, and they're wrong again this year. Unfortunately, it will be the average American who pays the price next year as the policies proposed in this bill actually take hold. That price will come in the form of more inflation, fewer jobs, slower growth, and a lower standard of living for every family in America. To make matters worse, this bill is coming to us after a truncated process that prevented any House member from having input into this bill. Perhaps it would be better to say there was no process at all. This bill has not gone through any committee in either the House or the Senate, and is the product of a backroom negotiation between two Democratic senators operating on their own. This is about as far from regular order as one can get. Not a single House member on either side of the aisle has had any substantive input into this bill. And the same can be said for all but a small handful of senators.
Congressman Tom Cole, Republican from Oklahoma, ranking member on the Rules Committee at today's meeting that will set the rules for full House floor debate on this bill. That's scheduled for Friday. And while the full House currently has 220 Democrats and 210 Republicans with five vacancies, so if no House Republicans vote for this spending and tax bill, Democrats can afford to have just a couple of their members vote no and still have it pass. That's not the same for the Rules Committee. In the Rules Committee, Democrats outnumber Republicans 9-4, better than 2-1 ratio. Majority party in that committee almost never loses a vote as it comes up. Wall Street today, the Dow up 535, NASDAQ up 360, S&P up 87. A story from CNN, the U.S. Justice Department announced criminal charges Wednesday against a member of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps for allegedly trying to orchestrate the assassination of John Bolton, who served in senior national security positions during the Trump and Bush administrations. The alleged plot was likely in retaliation for the January 2020 U.S. airstrike that killed Qassem Soleimani, commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Justice Department said. Justice Department posting this video with two officials.
Hello, I'm Matt Olson, the Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department's National Security Division. Today, the Department of Justice unsealed a complaint exposing a brazen attempt by a member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps to carry out the murder of a former U.S. national security advisor. This assassination plot was undertaken in apparent retaliation for the January 2020 killing of Qassem Soleimani. We face a rising threat from authoritarian regimes who seek to reach beyond their own borders to commit acts of repression, including inside the United States. This is an especially appalling example of the government of Iran perpetrating egregious acts of transnational violence in violation of U.S. laws and our national sovereignty. The facts we allege are clear and chilling. Beginning in October 2021, working on behalf of the IRGC's Quds Force, Shahram Porsafi offered a U.S. resident a significant sum of money to hire someone to, quote, eliminate the former national security advisor. This was not an idle threat. And this is not the first time we have uncovered brazen acts by Iran to exact revenge against individuals on U.S. soil. We will work tirelessly to continue to expose and disrupt every one of these efforts. The Justice Department has the solemn duty to defend our citizens and those living in the United States from hostile governments who seek to hurt or kill them. We will not tolerate this conduct from Tehran or any other regime. Today's actions should serve as a reminder that our memory is long and our reach is far. We will work relentlessly to bring to justice those who would violate our laws and threaten our people.
Hello, I'm Larissa Knapp, Executive Assistant Director of the FBI's National Security Branch. Today's announcement makes clear once again the FBI's top priority is to protect the American people by preventing acts of terrorism. According to the complaint unsealed today, Iranian national Shahram Porsafi attempted to hire an individual to assassinate a former national security advisor here on U.S. soil. Through the hard work of the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Forces, we were able to detect this heinous plot and disrupt it. Iran has a history of attempting to assassinate individuals in the U.S. it deems a threat, but the U.S. government has a longer history of protecting the homeland and holding accountable those who threaten our safety and security of our citizens. This investigation is the epitome of the fantastic work done by the FBI every day. Together with our state, federal, and local law enforcement partners, as well as our allies overseas, the FBI will dedicate every available resource to identifying and disrupting these acts of terrorism. Let there be no doubt. The FBI, the U.S. government, and our partners remain vigilant in the fight against terrorism here in the U.S. and overseas.
Larissa Knapp, Executive Assistant Director, FBI National Security Branch, and Matthew Olson, Assistant Attorney General, National Security Division, a video posted by the Justice Department today. John Bolton, the former National Security Advisor, tweeting a statement that begins, "I wish to thank the Justice Department for initiating the criminal proceeding unsealed today. The FBI for its diligence in discovering and tracking the Iranian regime's criminal threat to American citizens, and the Secret Service for providing protection against Tehran's efforts." He goes on, "While much cannot be said publicly right now, one point is indisputable. Iran's rulers are liars, terrorists, and enemies of the United States. Their radical anti-American objectives are unchanged. Their commitments are worthless, and their global threat is growing." That was part of the statement from John Bolton. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the U.S. will conduct more military exercises with Baltic countries, such as Latvia, and may bring in more U.S. troops to guard that area against any possible threat from Russia. Secretary Austin visiting Latvia today, the first U.S. Defense Secretary to visit that country since 1995. In a joint news conference with the Latvian Defense Minister, Secretary Austin asked about Russia's military capabilities following 6 months of war with Ukraine and their ability to now threaten the Baltics.
In terms of the assessment of Russia's capabilities going forward and their ability to threaten Latvia, there's no question that Russia committed a significant portion of its most capable forces to the Ukraine effort. And as a result, they have lost quite a bit of important equipment, tanks and mechanized vehicles. They've also lost an enormous amount of people to killed and wounded. They are, from a ground perspective, they are less capable than they were before this started, obviously. But they still have capability in their air forces and their maritime forces. We don't ever want to lose sight of that. Russia would endeavor over the years to regenerate capability going forward. We expect that they try to do that or want to do that. Again, the sanctions and some of the trade restrictions will make that a bit more difficult than it would otherwise have been. In terms of lessons learned, I think one key lesson learned here for the entire international community is the seriousness with which countries take the international rules-based order and how important that is, because very quickly we saw NATO unify in response to Putin's unprovoked aggression in Ukraine. And that unity has stood strong, and we're going to endeavor to make sure that it remains that way going forward. So this is important not just to the NATO alliance, it's important to the world. As we said so many times, NATO is a defensive alliance. We're focused on protecting the sovereign territory of all of the NATO members. And so as we look at continuing to operate with great countries like Latvia and others in the region, what we want to do is increase interoperability and make sure that we, no question, have the ability to protect their sovereign territory. And so these rotations in and out are beneficial to Latvia, but they're also beneficial to us as well as we streamline processes and procedures and how we would conduct operations in the future.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin in Riga, Latvia, joint news conference with the Latvian defense minister. U.S. now has about 500 troops in Latvia. That's up 100 since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And in Europe overall, the U.S. now has about 100,000 troops. That's up 20% since the invasion. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying in a video address today that Crimea is Ukrainian and we will never leave it behind. This after several explosions hit Russian bases in Crimea. It's an area that's still legally Ukrainian but has been occupied by Russia for several years, and Russia actually said it has annexed it. And Ukraine's Air Force now saying that 9 Russian warplanes have been destroyed, but that Air Force not directly claiming responsibility for the attack. From Reuters, China has withdrawn a promise not to send troops or administrators to Taiwan if it takes control of the island. An official document showed on Wednesday, signaling a decision by President Xi Jinping to grant less autonomy than previously offered. China's white paper on its position on self-ruled Taiwan follows days of unprecedented Chinese military exercises near the island, which Beijing claims as its territory, in protest against U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit last week. That from Reuters. Speaker Pelosi joining other House Democrats who were on that trip for a news conference today in Washington, D.C.
In terms of Taiwan, our purpose in going to Taiwan was to say that we have this strong relationship built on the status quo, which we support. Which is really important because they're saying, well, we're trying to upset. No, the Taiwan Relations Act of 1979, at the same time as our change of recognition, established the terms of our relationship, the 3 U.S.-China joint communiques, and the 6 assurances. So there's no departure from that. But in keeping with that, we will not allow China to isolate Taiwan. They have kept Taiwan from participating in the World Health Organization, other things where Taiwan can make a very valued contribution. And they may keep them from going there, but they're not keeping us from going to Taiwan. We will not allow them to. So we think their reaction, that was our purpose, to salute this thriving democracy. Don't take it from me. Freedom House said one of the freest democracies in the world. Show our respect for that. For the success of their economy, for the enthusiasm of their young people to embrace democracy, and others as well, but the young knowing nothing else except a free Taiwan. So that was our purpose. Their pretext was our visit for them to do what they normally do, intensified. They didn't do it when the Senate went under Chairman Menendez of the Foreign Relations Committee. They just decided to do it this time.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, at a Capitol Hill news conference. Also there were 4 of the 5 other House Democrats who went in this CODEL, or congressional delegation, to several Indo-Pacific countries, and there was a stop in Taiwan. This from the New York Times. The Biden administration is vowing to continue sailing warships through the Taiwan Strait and to conduct air operations in the region in response to Chinese military drills that U.S. officials say are evolving into a long-term strategy of heightened military pressure on the island. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, which you can get as a podcast on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. President Joe Biden today signing a bill into law that expands health care and disability benefits for millions of veterans exposed to toxic burn pits while they served in Iraq and Afghanistan. White House says it is the largest expansion of veterans' health care and benefits in the last three decades. Official title of the bill is Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics, or PACT Act. Bill passing the U.S. House and Senate with bipartisan support. Here's President Biden.
To the veterans and their families here today and for all around the country, we can never fully thank you for your service and your sacrifice. And that's not hyperbole. That's a literal fact. Less than 1% of you risk everything to defend 99% of the population. 1% risk 99%. We owe you. You're the backbone. You're the steel. You're the sinew. You're the very fiber that makes this country what it is. And that's not hyperbole. That's a fact. As a nation, we have many obligations. I've been saying this for a long, long time. We have many obligations, but only one truly sacred obligation: to equip those we send into harm's way and to care for them and their families when they come home. We have a lot of obligations, but that's a truly sacred obligation we have. Today, we're one step closer to fulfilling that sacred obligation with the bill I'm about to sign into law. This is the most significant law our nation has ever passed to help millions of veterans who are exposed to toxic substances during their military services. You know, Secretary McDonough can tell you, I was going to get this done come hell or high water. This was something, the first thing, even when I, a lot of staff knows, that's true.
President Biden in the East Room of the White House, also speaking at this bill signing ceremony, Veterans Affairs Secretary Dennis McDonough, and Danielle Robinson, the widow of Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, for whom the bill is named. Heath Robinson died in 2020 from lung cancer. And there, Heath Robinson's daughter, Brielle Robinson. President Biden handing her the pen he used to sign the bill into law. And in the audience, comedian and activist John Stewart, who's been a visible presence during debate on this bill the past number of weeks, President Biden telling him, "We owe you big." The new law estimated to cost $280 billion over 10 years. Former President Donald Trump's clout over the Republican Party was once again on the line in a key gubernatorial primary, writes Fox News. And once again, the former president's endorsed candidate came out on top. Businessman and former Army Ranger officer Tim Michaels edged former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish to capture Wisconsin's GOP nomination for governor, setting up a crucial November showdown with Democratic Governor Tony Evers in a key general election battleground state. That was from Fox News. Tim Michaels did thank former President Trump in his victory speech Tuesday night.
I'd like to thank President Trump for his support, for his endorsement. It was a tremendous validation of our meteoric rise in this campaign. He knows that we need to have new leadership in Madison, and he sees a lot of similarities. He didn't have to run for president. I don't have to run for governor. He wanted to drain the swamp. We found out it's a really big swamp, and I know that Madison needs firm executive leadership, and that's what I'm going to do as governor.
A victory speech by Tim Michaels, now Wisconsin Republican gubernatorial nominee, Tuesday night. The person that he beat in the primary, Rebecca Clefish, who was endorsed by former Vice President Mike Pence, said in her concession speech Tuesday night, the Republican Party needs to come together for the general election.
I've conceded this race to Tim Michaels, and I urge you all to stay in the fight. Because the fight now is truly against Tony Evers and the liberals who want to take away our way of life. And I honestly still believe that hard work does still matter, particularly in our local races. And I see so many of you who have just fought battles after battles after battles. School board, county board, town council, judgeships. You guys have fought. You guys have won. Let's keep winning, and let's beat Tony Evers this fall. Thank you.
Rebecca Clefish on Tuesday night conceding to Tom Michaels, now the Wisconsin Republican gubernatorial nominee, running against the incumbent Democratic governor, Tony Evers, going for a second term. In Washington State, Republican Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, who had voted to impeach former President Donald Trump, conceded the Republican primary to Joe Kent, a retired Special Forces officer who was endorsed by Donald Trump. Washington State has an open primary system. All candidates run on a single ballot, regardless of party affiliation. The top two vote-getters in the primary go on to the general election. Washington also has a vote-by-mail state. Voters do not have to declare a party affiliation. The top vote-getter after the August 2nd primary was a Democrat, Marie Glusenkamp Perez. And on Tuesday, Joe Kent got second place, Republican, to go on to the general election.
If you look at how high the stakes are, this isn't politics as usual. The other side, the far left, the globalists, the administrative state, they work in lockstep. They are very unified. They have an agenda. They're not playing politics as usual anymore. They're not trying to win over any hearts and minds. They're not trying to have the best argument. They are trying to radically change our country by seizing every single lever of power they have. And once they have control of that lever of power, they wield it against us. Whether it was the raid that happened last night at President Trump's private residence as a private citizen, exactly, or whether it was the FBI counterterrorism task force going after parents that show up at school board meetings. The national security state has been weaponized against us at the behest of the progressive left and the globalists. However, we are what's going to push back against all of them, because we're going to get unified and we're going to tell them that this ends. We are taking back our republic, and starting in 2023. So just like when I started, I want to earn every single one of your votes. I want to earn independent votes. We have a great opportunity to bring over people that once thought they were Democrats, that thought they were independents, into our camp. Because it's clear right now, there's two sides. One side wants complete and total control, and we'll do anything to get it. And then there's us. And I want to discuss any kind of policy differences rigorously with all of you. So reach out to my campaign. Reach out to me. I am more than happy to sit down and discuss any policy issues that any of you had. It was a hard-fought primary.
Republican Joe Kent running for Congress in Washington State, the 3rd Congressional District, on Tuesday. Incumbent Republican Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler with an email concession in this race. This according to Associated Press. She wrote, "Though my campaign came up short this time, I'm proud of all we've accomplished together for the place where I was raised and still call home. I'm proud that I always told the truth, stuck to my principles, and did what I knew to be best for our country." She was one of 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach former President Trump. Of those 10, now 4 have retired, 3 have lost in primaries, 2 have won in primaries, and there's one left, Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Her primary is next week. Finally, on Washington Today, when the House Rules Committee met today to work on that large spending and tax bill covering health care and climate change, they started the hearing by remembering a colleague who died last week in a car crash, Congresswoman Jackie Walorski, Republican from Indiana, and also dying in that crash, two of her staffers, Zachary Potts, 27 years old, and Emma Thompson, 28 years old. Emma Thompson had also worked for Congressman Michael Burgess, Republican from Texas, who sits on the House Rules Committee. And Congressman Burgess joined today's session remotely because he had just gone to her funeral.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay on this thing?
I can.
Well, I appreciate you yielding time to me. I'm obviously on the road. back to the Capitol from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. This morning we did have the funeral for Emma Thompson, who served as my communications director 2017-2018. My gosh, she was just 28 years old, and she always performed so well, and never a harsh word, always words of encouragement for everyone. She's certainly going to be missed. I want to associate myself with the comments made with about our colleague Jackie Walorski, but for the years I had Emma Thompson in my life, I feel like we were a better office because of it, and it's going to be tough, but we'll carry on and try to carry on in her memory. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to have that moment, and I'll yield back to you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Burgess, and thank you, Mr. Cole. And we're going to miss Jackie, and we're going to miss Zachary, and we're going to miss Emma.
From the House Rules Committee meeting today, Congressman Michael Burgess, Republican from Texas, joining from his car. And at the end, you heard the chair of the committee, Congressman James McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts. Congresswoman Walorski's funeral is set for this week in Indiana, and Zachary Potts' funeral will be this weekend in Michigan. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. For more of Washington's top stories sent to you every day, sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word at c-span.org/connect. You can subscribe there. Have a good night.